So tonight I'd like to talk about being present with fear. And this can also be applied to any challenging emotion. So kind of checking in with yourselves, where you're at right now, if there's been challenges going on in your lives, you might find some of this kind of connecting with those challenges, and maybe things are really nice right now. But life is full of challenges. I think everybody in this room and online has ha known that. And so I'm hoping that this Dharma talk is something that you'll find helpful in your lives. And I'd like to begin with a story of my 10-year-old child, Issa, who is very afraid of the dark. She has trouble going to sleep at night, and she's gotten addicted to watching an episode, a 20-minute episode before going to sleep. But as she's getting older, she's realizing that escaping from the fear is not solving the fear, and that she continues to be really, really afraid of going to sleep at night. And she'd rather sleep next to my husband and I than actually, she's not even alone in the room. She sleeps in the room with her brother, who's a little older than her. But she's still very, very afraid of the dark. And so, as we were talking, she was getting in sort of like a little bit of a panic before going to sleep one night. I said to her, "What's wrong now? Is there anything to be afraid of right now?" And she was, thinking about it, and she's like, "The dark. I'm really afraid of the dark right now." And I said, "Is there anything that's happening to you right now? Are you in danger?" And she said, "No, I'm not." And we went on like this for a while, and she realized that right now, all is well. Right now, and only now. And if something right now wasn't well, you'd be able to handle it. She'd know what to do in the moment. If there's actually something threatening in the moment, we don't have time to be afraid. We act. So this was about learning how to trust the present moment, that in this moment, we are safe, we are well, and if we're not, we will know what to do, having some trust in that. The Buddha's awakening required him to be really present with fear. So on the night of his enlightenment, he vowed to sit and not move until he was fully awakened. He made this vow. And Mara, some of you may know these stories. Mara is this evil spirit who comes and attacks the Buddha at any opportunity that Mara has. And so the Mara was not going to put up with the Buddha becoming an enlightened being, and said and just kind of attacked the Buddha with all of his might and all of his armies, and brought all this fear to the Buddha. And it's said that that night, the Buddha to be, stayed present with those experiences and was fueled by compassion. So we can imagine just being present with all of the Buddha's deepest fears, represented by this demon, Mara. And he stayed present, and he stayed compassionate with his own experience, present and compassionate. And it's said that the Buddha to be conquered the anger and the fear and the hostility that Mara aroused, and which led Mara to leave defeated. But the demon Mara would visit the Buddha even after the night of his enlightenment. And the Buddha started to see Mara not as an enemy, but as a companion, somebody who was always with him throughout his life. And when Mara would come and try to make him scared or try to upset the Buddha in some way, Buddha would say, "I see you, Mara." And this is what we do with our mindfulness practice. We're watching the experiences as they arise and pass. And we can become present with fear-based mindful mind states. So often I find the story really helpful. Like, it lightens me up when I'm having some sort of challenge, particularly around fear. But it could be other challenges too. Pain, emotional pain, any kind of suffering. I just sort of say, "I see you, Mara. I see what you're trying to do. You're keeping me away from the present moment." Because fear, if you really look at fear, it is in the past and in the future. And we tend to do whatever we can to avoid that fear. So we look for escapes. Except fear feels horrible. We don't want Mara hanging around us. So we'll escape. But the Buddha did not escape. The Buddha sometimes would be warned, "Hey, Mara's coming. Mara's coming. You need to watch out. You need to get away, Buddha." And the Buddha would say, no, let's invite Mara to tea." And he'd sit down, sitting down with fear, not avoiding it, not repressing or suppressing our fears or our challenging emotions, not trying to change the situation, but being present. I really think of being present with fear as an act of self-compassion. You know, it's like when we're compassionate with other people, we're present with them, and we bring all of our awareness to what they're going through, and that eases them, right? What if we are to do that with ourselves, bringing that presence when we are struggling? So fear takes us away from the present moment. And then we get into that monkey mind and all those mind states and just kind of spiral sometimes out. And what we can do is just return to what's happening right now. In this moment, is everything okay? And if it's not, what do I need to do? What is the action that we need to take right now? Another Buddhist practice around working with fear is called the corpse meditation. And some of you may be familiar with this, but the practice might sound pretty grim and unconventional. It's a real practice. During the Buddha's time, and even today, it's quite common in several regions of Thailand and certain parts of Southeast Asia, particularly among Buddhist monks. To engage in this meditation while being around or gazing upon deceased bodies. And this can involve an actual corpse or even a photograph of one. And just staying with the fear that arises. So there's these cultural customs of staying by a dead body or in burial grounds and crematoriums and doing this as a daily practice. To me, the corpse meditation is like our version of exposure therapy. You think about exposure therapy, it's something that you're afraid of, and you stay present with that fear. And eventually, that fear transforms. Now, you don't have to go like super extreme right away. You know, exposure therapy starts off small. Like, I'm afraid of spiders, and it feels like a very kind of visceral, instinctual thing that I have a lot of trouble with. But I've found that I can get into a state of almost feeling like endearing to spiders and having a connection with them, especially when they're really little. And I let them crawl on me. And that's like a beginning of staying with something. So you don't need to, I don't think I could go for one of those big spiders with all the legs and no, but start small. And the corpse meditation is really about being present with the fear of sickness, of dying, of decay, and death, and becoming comfortable in the face of our fears. So with time, with practice, with staying with the challenging emotions, and this does not mean to the point of incredible suffering. You know, I've had some pretty intense, challenging emotions, as I'm sure all of us have. And sometimes I can stay with them, and sometimes I really need a break. And we need to know, we need to discern when that is. We don't need to be fundamentalist meditators. But meditation helps, right? And so it's important to kind of right effort. In Buddhism, there's this wise effort. When is it important to stay with it? And when is it important to give yourself some other stimulation and other forms of care? So fear, I said earlier, is rooted in the past and in the future. When we become present with fear, we can say, what is there? What is this fear? What does it feel like? What does it feel like to sit with fear? And it ends up that fear is like a chimera, ever shifting and revealing its true nature when it's confronted directly. So what is this true nature of fear? Be present with it and see. What is the true nature of fear? I can't tell you. Books can't tell you. No one can tell you. It's the presence. It's staying present with it and seeing what is fear? What is this fear? And I suggest that it's similar to being present with an itch or a pain in your body. That when we're really present with a pain, we think a pain in our body is this solid mass of pain, right? When you're in pain, it like our minds kind of glom on to that pain. And it's hard, right? But when we become really present with pains, many of you have maybe experienced this in meditation, when you stay with that itch, well, you stay with that uncomfortable feeling. Like I have an itch on my nose right now because a hair is going right across my nose right now. And I'm going to stay with it and try not to itch or move it away. And that's what we do when we're sitting, right? We kind of just stay with the experiences, whatever they may be, and just get some curiosity into it. We can do this with fear. So I'd like to just do a little guided meditation where we're just going to be present with a discomfort in our body and see what it is. So just take a moment. I invite you to close your eyes for this one, or avert your gaze downward. And notice any discomfort in your body. It could be an itch, an ache, something you really want to move and change and get out of. And just pay attention to it, bringing your presence to that discomfort. And noticing moment by moment what's going on there. Is it one feeling? Does it move? Does it shift? Does it pulse? What does it feel like? For those of you online, if you take a moment to type into the chat any experiences you just had with that feeling of discomfort, what did you notice about how that discomfort in your body felt in a word or a phrase? Go ahead and feel free to type into the chat. And for those of you in the room, I know it's tempting to keep the meditation going, but maybe I'm going to silence this mic for a moment and we'll return to the online folks in a minute. Online, we have an itch intensified and lessened in cycles, and just another sensation, a bit of fear that it will stay for how long? That's right. In the room, we heard from some folks that an itch turned into another itch, and then maybe another itch. And it just sort of kept moving around the body. Mm-hmm. And from another, that there was a softening, that there was some sense of softening around that experience. Thank you, everybody. So once we're present with anything uncomfortable, even fear, we find that it's not what we think it is. I think that's, for me, that's the big takeaway. It's just not, I can't say what it is. It's just never what I think it is. something else. I'd like to tie this in to Brian's talk last week on the gift of fearlessness. So Brian talked about offering your presence to someone as they experience fear is really a precious gift. It's a precious gift to be with somebody when they're having fear and they can recognize that they are not alone. And so too, being present with your own fear is also a gift for yourself and for others. So it's a gift for yourself. Being present with fear grants you the opportunity to cultivate profound emotional resilience and understanding within yourself. It's truly a practice of self-compassion. And by being in tune with our own fears, we avoid reacting out of fear in manners that could potentially harm other people. So we know, like when we're acting out of fear, we have the potential to hurt others. And so being present is a gift to ourselves and to others. And being present with your own fear serves as a gift to others by also allowing you to empathize, right, more deeply and respond with compassion and offer your support to those who are experiencing fear themselves. Your self-awareness, your ability to navigate fear influences others. It's like just as fear is contagious, so, and I'll be talking about that in a little bit, so is being present with fear. That has widespread effects that we may not really understand or know about, but we intuitively, I think we intuitively know that being present with others in fear and being able to be with our own fear is a profound gift to others. I'd also like to recognize that fear extends beyond the individual level. It's worth contemplating how we exist within a broader culture and how we can embrace fear consciously, how that might run counter to the norms of the culture. Fostering alternative approaches to engaging with the horrible news of the world. And in my introduction, I forgot to mention that I'm a sociology professor. And so I'm very fascinated by kind of the group dynamics around fear and a culture of fear. So think about the news. How most of it is extremely fear-based, how it gets our attention, how fear sells news. I think we can see that that's a phenomenon that has not shifted over time. Now we have clickbait, which also a lot of it is fear-based, not all of it. But in a culture of fear, fear, anxiety, and apprehension play a significant role in shaping people's behaviors and decisions and interactions. And a constant source of unease, often driven by the media or politics or social pressures, exists within the culture. And that fear can lead to heightened states of caution, reluctance to take risks, and an overall atmosphere of distrust. So this is a collective phenomenon as well as an individual one. And I could go on about this, but I think I will not because I want to keep the time reasonable. But yeah, culture of fear. We can see these fear-driven narratives and how it can lead to scapegoating and the stigmatization of certain groups. We see this around us. So I invite you all to take a moment to consider how the pervasiveness of fear in the culture impacts you. How does it impact the choices that you make? Maybe where to travel, what to avoid, how to raise your children, and so forth. So just take a minute to just contemplate and think about how does the pervasiveness of fear impact your choices? I have an extreme example. I know of a family who won't let their children leave the house. They wouldn't let the children leave the house during COVID. And now after COVID, or I don't know if you can say after COVID, but they still will not let the children leave the house. They were planning a family trip with some other friends of ours. This is how I learned about the story, to come from Phoenix up to the Flagstaff area. But when they heard that the windows would be open, because it's hot and this is how we cool ourselves down here in Flagstaff, they didn't feel comfortable coming. And they didn't come because they were afraid of having windows open. So I think sometimes those kind of extreme examples of fear offer a unique vantage point. They help illuminate how we ourselves may behave under influence of fear, only in a more extreme manner. And you can think about how that plays out in your own lives. But understanding how fear operates within us can empower us to cultivate greater self-awareness and to develop healthier strategies for managing fear in our own lives. And one of the interesting aspects of fear is how it spreads. So being present with your own fear is so important, and taking care of your fear, being gentle with yourselves, and sitting and returning to taking time to be with these challenging moments is critical. So I think we'll stop here. I can't help myself. I really want to mention one more thing. I'll try to keep it short. The Buddhist teaching of metta is loving kindness meditation. And it was created by the Buddha as a protection from harm. It's like a self-protection, and it can serve as an antidote to the culture, a culture dominated by fear. As we cultivate this mindset of loving kindness, of compassion, empathy, and interconnectedness. And so, you know, with metta loving kindness meditation, what you do is you focus on positive intentions and well wishes, beginning with yourself and expanding those well wishes in ever larger circles to others. And as I think about it, I really feel like that practice stands in great contrast to fear-based narratives. Like being connected with others and recognizing that, or just sharing well wishes for others, no matter who they are, is a really, really powerful practice. So I'll just put that out there and encourage some metta loving kindness meditation. So Thank you, everybody, for your attention tonight.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.